What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that may have been a little hasty in packing away its winter coat. Coming up, Daryl's done, Wigan get low, Luton's lifeline, a Steel City derby, and if Charlton players want to nip out for coffee, it might cost a place in the team. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And here we are again to talk all things Football League with you. Adrian Clark rightly shaking his head at that last terrible pun in the intro line. But I have a bone to pick with both Mr. Clark and Sam Parkin. I saw this week. Former Swansea City and Wrexham striker Lee Trundle has won the JD Cymru South Player of the Month award at the age of 48. He scored 6 goals in 4 games during February, so it makes me wonder, what the hell are you two playing at? How are you still not out there in the minor leagues of the East Midlands and the South, respectively?
Well, pure laziness, Matt. That's what it is. Nah, look, come on. Yeah, my knee's gone. I've got my first physio session today, as it happens. The comeback is on. Look, I've been told 3 to 6 months of physio before I can consider playing five-a-side again, but it's worth it. I'm going to be back out there, I promise.
Sam, you still look good on the five-a-side courts around your locale, don't you, against the fellow dads?
Mate, I scored 78 goals in 11 appearances in 23-24 at Hanworth Goals. Not been seen since, though. Not been seen since. But I have got a local mate who's desperate to get a game, so I'm going to be back on the WhatsApp in the next few days, lining up a game. So I'll be at it. All my attention's on working on my eldest left foot at the moment. It's taking up all my time. So he's not interested. But just I'm doing my utmost to make sure at least there's a toe punt there, somewhere to work with.
All right. I like the fact that you're still counting your goals. That's very sweet. All right. Before we get into things, let me remind you that our partners, Quinbet, have an offer for you. You can get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum 3 bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quinn Casino. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. For information on responsible gambling, visit gambleaware.org. Okay, we're going to kick off today, as is customary, with news of some managerial movements. And they are all coming in League One, a triple header to talk about. Let's start with an incoming. Wigan Athletic have appointed Ryan Lowe as their new head coach on a 3.5-year contract, replacing Sean Maloney, Wigan 15th in League One. He'll watch Saturday's game at Charlton from the stands. I think we said it last week, didn't we, Clarkie? This absolutely stunk of Ryan Lowe. He was always going to go there. Missed the Northwest with the exception of that job at Plymouth, but feels like a decent fit.
It does feel like a decent fit. I think Wigan have potential, don't they? We know that because they've been in the Premier League. You know, it's a club with history. You know, they've won the FA Cup in the not too distant past. So I think things like that do still have an appeal for managers. Obviously, you want to put bums on seats. I think there's, you know, too many sort of empty seats really at Wigan Athletic the last few seasons. That hasn't maybe helped the feeling that the club is going somewhere. Obviously, they've had massive financial difficulties as well along the way. But yeah, I really wish him well there. I do like Ryan Lowe. I like his openness. I think he's clearly a very good man manager. I don't think he's a super tactician. I don't think he's, you know, maybe one of the more innovative coaches out there. But what he will do is get a dressing room together and hopefully press the right buttons. He's got good football knowledge. He's got good experience. He knows what it takes to create a promotion winning team. The only issue is that Wigan feel quite a way off of being a promotion team, don't they? I think defensively, not too much of an issue. Doesn't need to tweak that too much. It's about what can he do at the top end of the pitch moving forwards to get Wigan to score more goals. And look, that's going to be a medium-term project. This season is all about looking at the players he wants to keep, and then next season he'll have a right old go at it, I'm sure. But yeah, I think well done to Wigan for getting him. I think that, yeah, if anything, I'm a little bit surprised that he hasn't aimed higher, but maybe that's where his sort of stock has fallen to at the moment. But he's got potential to do well there.
We said last week, Sam, that it felt a bit harsh getting rid of Sean Maloney, but this does feel like an upgrade based on what Lowe's done in the past.
Yeah, good experience, better experience. Obviously, promotions under his belt as well. I know I say this a lot on the podcast, but how has Ryan Lowe not played for Wigan? It's the first thing I'm going to throw out there. He's got Wigan written all over him. Even a loan
spell.
I'm sure
I played against him, yeah, when he was at Wigan. But obviously that never happened, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's unbelievable. I suppose in recent times, his strength has kind of been the solidity of his teams, definitely at Preston. They lacked a bit of creativity, certainly in the latter stages of his tenure. And that's something that has been recycled time and time again on this podcast when we've talked about Wigan. So they're not going to be particularly free scoring, but he is inheriting a squad that have got an excellent goalkeeper and a really good defensive setup. So let's see in time if he can turn them into a more attacking, entertaining entity. But yeah, in terms of a fit, I think it's a pretty good get for them. And I would anticipate with the right summer business, and there'll be a lot of it, I would anticipate with a relatively new owner as well, and then to improve on what's going to be a bottom half finish this season.
Yeah, just very quickly at Preston, they don't really sign very many players, do they? It's sort of quite a low turnover. I think it'd be quite nice for him to have that opportunity to just have a big old rebuild in the summer. Unfortunately, I suspect the goalkeeper might be one that goes, so he might fund the rebuild of the squad, the boy Tickle.
As I say, it'll be in the stands on Saturday. The fact they're not going up or down affords him that luxury. Elsewhere, Barnsley have sacked Daryl Clark after just 9 months in charge. They've lost 7 of their past 11. They're pretty much out of playoff contention as a result of that. Assistant coach and former Barnsley captain Conor Hourihan will take charge for the final 10 games. The chairman told the club website, "Daryl's worked extremely hard to try and get the team competitive and pushing for promotion. Unfortunately, we find ourselves 8 points away from the playoffs and feel that a change is needed." They've got form for this, haven't they, Sam? I always think it's strange when this happens this close to the end of the season. What do you make of it?
Probably not the right fit. I think, you know, Daryl Clark has probably not been maybe aligned with the sporting director. That seems to be the word. I remember, again, a few weeks ago talking about the January business players signed from here, there and everywhere. And I don't think probably that these players that have been identified maybe by Daryl Clark, and also some of these chaps that have come in haven't hit the ground running. So I think that it's probably not a particularly great squad. I think there's probably been a lack of goals from the front players. And I think Daryl Clark has always liked that rotation at the top end of the pitch, but normally he's been helped with a better return. So I think that's been a bit of a struggle, albeit Keeler Dunn, I think, has still contributed hugely and has been a good signing in that regard. I've always liked the midfield, Phillips and Russell and Connell. You know, when I've seen him in the flesh this season, they're quite easy on the eye, those guys, but they've just been a little bit of a soft touch. And I think that they keep having such a disappointing time at Oakwell. And I think that in turn heaps pressure on the manager, because the supporters turn out week after week to see them at home and want them to be more convincing there. 6 home wins all season, double the amount of victories on the road. I think a big part of it as well, and probably on reflection, not the right fit. And I remember speaking to him after one of those games I covered, and yeah, they were really impressive on the night, but I just got the sense walking away that maybe everything wasn't perfectly rosy. So yeah, we'll see which way they go now. Interesting, I know we're going to come on to him. I'm reading a lot about Michael Duff going back to Barnsley. Maybe Daryl Clark should just rock up at Huddersfield training this morning.
Yeah, why not? Clarky, the thing I think that would concern me if I was a Barnsley supporter is that they've sacked a manager late into the season again. This coming, what, 11 months after they got rid of Neil Collins with one game of the regular season left. It would suggest that maybe the planning's not as thorough and as diligent as it ought to be.
No, you look, they're on to their 12th permanent manager in 10 years. You know, that's not great, is it? That's not healthy. you know, players in that squad have been signed by a variety of different managers. And it's just, I wish more chairman, more owners would sort of realise that, you know, because each manager wants their own players. And yeah, it takes time for things to gel. It didn't ever really get going for them, did it, in truth? And I've said this before, Sam touched on it there. Home form matters. That's where everyone, it's the games that everyone goes to. That's where the vibe, the tone is set, and they have a shocking record at home, 19th best in the division. They are fantastic away from home, which tells me that structurally, tactically, talent-wise, they're actually fine. It's obviously a psychological issue in front of their home fans, and they've given up too many goals. I mean, I think the second half of games at Oakwell conceded goals galore, and that's the worst formula, isn't it? You know, everyone goes home very fed up because you've thrown it away in the second half and lost the game, and that's where the moans and groans kick in. So yeah, look, I feel for Darryl Clark. You know, he's a good football man, you know, and I hope he gets another chance. But it's a tough club, I think, at the moment, Barnsley, to manage, as the turnover would indicate.
Yeah, lots of similarities with the final managerial change we're going to talk about, one that Sam's touched on already. Mm. Michael Duff getting his marching papers from Huddersfield, that after their fourth defeat in five games against Bristol Rovers at the weekend, it saw them drop out of the playoff places. John Worthington in charge for the rest of the season. Worthington at the John Smiths, two very average bitters from the 90s coming together. Clarkey, I mean, this kind of, there's loads of echoes of Barnsley here, isn't there? Not least the home form. They haven't won a game on their own patch this year, and it's harsh, yeah, it seems to me, but as we said with Darryl Clark, if you don't win in front of your own supporters the majority of the time, you are going to come under pressure, and unless we forget, they did spend a few quid in the summer.
Yeah, exactly, but the injuries have been horrific, haven't they, for Huddersfield, and that I think is a big factor, clearly. Yeah, it is a shame what's happened there. The weird one is that they're happy to sort of roll on with an interim manager for, you know, until the rest of the season, potentially, if that's what it takes. And that just feels a little bit odd to me. Is it really going to improve that dramatically? Because obviously the season is still alive. They can turn it around, Huddersfield Town. But yeah, no, with the money that they spent, the chairman is... He has high expectations, doesn't he, the owner? And obviously, they've fallen short. I don't think the football is very good to watch, if truth be told. I think there's been a lot of flat performances at home, not too many goals. And that's why they've made the change. It's funny how things can unravel, though, because not so long ago, they were, you know, they looked like they were flying, and they were absolutely nailed on for the playoffs. We even talked about them at one point of nipping into the top two. So it's been quite the dip, and it's been costly for Duff, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think the owner's comments maybe pre-season were that automatic promotion was the aim, was the remit. So to drop out of the playoffs, I think, has probably cost him his job. And also, I remember being at a game, I think it was November, December time, and he was bemoaning the lack of clinical edge in his side, yeah, despite having four strikers that he rotated. Well, since then, they've brought in Joe Taylor. That was a long-running saga. Where they're going to get him from Luton? I know he's been injured or been struggling with fitness. Scored, I think, already for them, but not been available. And Dion Charles can't score for love nor money. No, so... Yeah. And you look at those two signings and you think, my goodness me, they should improve any League One side with aspirations of promotion. So to get them in, not get them scoring, maybe not creating enough, it could have been very different had those two hit the ground running. Not blaming them, but I think that's a big ingredient that the owners backed him.
Yeah, the goal's definitely a problem. None in their last six home league games. Might not be a bad thing for him, though, I guess. I mean, he can say, well, they should have kept with me if they don't get promoted, and rather than see through a whole campaign and then not get into the playoffs. Who knows? He's probably rocked up at Barnsley by the time you're hearing this. So we shall see. All right, it's been a busy midweek. We're going to have a look back at some of the key games next. I want to start at the bottom of the championship because it is fascinating. 6 points separating the bottom six with, what, 9 games left to play. Hull had a big win over Oxford on Wednesday. Plymouth got their first away victory this season, beating Pompey. We'll talk more about Plymouth later, but Adrian, you were on commentary duty for a mammoth win for Luton in South Wales. All about the volleys, this one, and the 3 points as far as Luton are concerned.
It was such a strange game. Honestly, the first half, if you took away the stands and the crowd and everything, it's just a pitch. If you'd have told me that it was a Conference South game or a Ryman Premier League game, I would have said, this is poor for the level. That's how bad it was. I reckon there were two or three passes strung together at a time. The ball kept going out, miscontrolling it. It was absolutely wretched. Just a pure stinker. Yes, you look at the highlights of this game. There's some great goals. There's some great moments. Most of them came in the second half. There was one good volley in the first half from Walsh. Liam Walsh, that was well saved. That was it. Second half was excellent. I think I came away thinking, well, Cardiff are trying to play football. They're trying to knock it around. They, Omariz has got a clear idea. There's a bit more of an identity to Cardiff now, but it just looked a little bit short of quality. Salek up front didn't really get a lot to feed off. It wasn't too much creativity. Callum Chambers, formerly of Arsenal, scored a brilliant volley. Well, actually, his volley goal wasn't brilliant. It was a good volley.
He nearly scored a brilliant one, didn't he?
the tickers on his right foot, 25 yarder, it hit the bar. It was absolutely brilliant. He was good in the game. I thought Will Fish at the back was excellent as well for Cardiff. But yeah, they lacked a bit of guile. For Luton, they did show really good spirit. They dug in because obviously they went one down and you thought, wow, this is it. You know, their season's collapsing here. But Bloomfield stayed calm and he brought on some good subs. I actually looked at the Cardiff bench and thought it was stronger than Luton's, but it was Luton's that made the difference. He took off the two strikers, which is bold when you're chasing goals. Both did look devoid of confidence, Adebayo and Morris, I have to say. And yeah, Brown gave them something different. Milenic Ali out on the left-hand side came on and it looked excellent. Asgard was always good on the ball for Luton. And yeah, then they got themselves a brilliant goal. Another volley. Yeah, absolutely superb one for Jordan Clark. And then Asgard just sort of pops up. So they started with a 3-5-2. They actually ended with one up front, even though they were chasing the game. But they had runners from deep. And Asgard just was able, in that system, Asgard was able to push up a little bit. And he gambled. He got into the box and got himself the winning goal. And it was some moment for Luton Town. And you do wonder whether that is the turning point for them. That volley, I think, from Clark could be the moment that sort of saves Luton's season, but they've got to go and back it up now. But yeah, I was quite impressed with their togetherness. I was impressed with Bloomfield's decisions, if not the overall quality of the match, which was pretty low.
So they're second bottom. They're 2 points behind Cardiff, who are a place above that perforated line. MREs are not particularly impressed. Players are not taking responsibility and we are in trouble. Not exactly. Tub-thumping speech from the manager there. elsewhere at the bottom, Derby beat Coventry by 2-0. The surprise result of midweek this. John Eustace now 2 wins in a row. We are going to talk more Derby later, sadly. But Sam, for your friend, this is the upturn that he desperately, desperately needed. And I guess from a Coventry perspective, they ain't going to win every week. You know, they had more shots, more possession, but it's not sustainable to just win every game between now and the end of the season. You're going to have games like this where it just doesn't go your way.
Yeah, it looked like a bit of a rare off night for them. Not too much really on the Derby goal, despite having to chase the game for a decent spell in the second half. A different shape for Lampard here. 4-3-3. I think Mason Clark only fit enough for the bench. Rodoni missing. Sheaf out again. So there's a few problems there and worth keeping an eye on whether they revert to the back three. But yeah, just a rare off night, had you right. my mate. Not sure he's going to get that golden boot, is he? Looked a little bit rusty back in the team. I think for Derby, it seems to be Harrison Armstrong who's getting a lot of praise, midfield player on loan from Everton, one of the players brought in during the January to add a little bit of craft maybe to Paul Warne's squad as it was then. And yeah, back-to-back wins. I did note that they've had four shots against Coventry this season and scored four goals, four shots on target, and done the double over them. They were very fortuitous to win at the Rico earlier in the season. I'm not suggesting that here, but it just shows you, you know, the way that Derby are probably going to get success. It's going to be tight margins, built on that strong defence. And I think they already, with a really good, solid, excellently balanced midfield, Ebu Adams, Thompson, the aforementioned Armstrong. This is a strong-looking Derby performance, giving themselves an opportunity to create what a few weeks ago would have looked like a bit of a miracle.
Yeah, look, your hard work, desire, low block. They sort of low blocked Cov, I think. But yeah, on the shots on target as well, Sam. Obviously, they beat Blackburn 2-1 in the John Eustace snake derby at the weekend. Again, scored with both their shots on target. So four shots on target across two games, four goals, two wins, 6 points. Massive. And you do think now Derby, they might be able to reel in a Cardiff. Or even in Oxford.
Yeah, Oxford sinking like a stone. So Derby 35 points, third from bottom. That's a point worse off than Cardiff. Oxford and Stoke then on 39, holding out of it on 40. Pompey maybe feeling a little safe on 42, albeit they could have done without losing at home to Plymouth. At the top of the table, meanwhile, it continues to be tight. We'll talk in a moment about Sam's trip to Bramall Lane midweek. But first of all, Leeds back top after an early and a late goal saw them pass Millwall at Elland Road, avenging that FA Cup reverse a few weeks back. Is that their mini wobble over then, Clark? He didn't beat West Brom at home and then lost at Pompey, but back on the horse here, importantly.
Yeah, it's a good professional win, isn't it? And, you know, it's another opponent that's gone to Elland Road and failed to find a shot on target. You know, they're racking up quite the list, aren't they, this season? Didn't really give Millwall much of a sniff. And it was the kind of win, kind of sort of straightforward win that Leeds really, really needed. Yeah, look, it's still not comfy, is it? They're 4 points clear of Burnley in third. But we're into single digits now, aren't we? 9 games to go. Definitely the run-in is upon us. And I'm looking at the fixtures. I think they've got a relatively easy running. You know, they've got teams like Preston, Swansea and Stoke at home. I mean, is there anyone out there that thinks any of those teams are going to get anything out of it? They got Oxford away. Oxford are in bad nick. And they've got Luton and Plymouth away. Yeah, but, you know, potentially huge games for those teams fighting, but surely you'd make Leeds massive favourites. You know, the hardest game they've got the hardest two games is Bristol City at home and Middlesbrough away. So, yeah, I think Leeds are going to kick on now and make themselves champions. And then it's between Sheffield United and Burnley to get second place. But, yeah, no, it's another good performance from Leeds, what they needed after a slightly iffy start to March.
Yeah, well, Sheffield United not able to take advantage of that iffiness for very long. They were held by Bristol City in front of you, Sam. A late equaliser here for the playoff chasers, Bristol City. But Chris Wilder saying that he thought his team looked tired and that they lost the midfield battle in particular. Do you agree with him?
Yeah, I thought Bristol City were the better side, no question, throughout. In keeping with a lot of the recent games and months for Sheffield United, they aren't obsessed with having the ball, and they have, you know, really talented, dangerous front players who can, you know, take advantage of just a few chances and get them over the line in games. And that looked like it was very much going to be the case here. Their standout players were the goalkeeper, Michael Cooper, who made one of the saves of the season. I mean, we have always loved him on this podcast. It blows my mind that he didn't get a move earlier in his career, because he's been top quality for Argyle for so many seasons. But he makes an amazing save from Sinclair Armstrong. And then Tyrese Campbell's in keeping with his recent performances, 3-3 now for him, scores a brilliant goal when they had started to turn the screw because Chris Wilder had been forced to make changes. And if they were a little bit predictable in the first half, Gus Harmer coming on just brings them a little bit of invention, changes the shape because of he comes in off the left-hand side. They have an extra body centrally, you can get on the ball and he can prize teams open with his passing. So that's exactly what happened prior to that and after that. Bristol City had the ball and probed and created one or two chances. But again, forgive me if I'm repetitive, Bristol City don't have that cut and thrust in the final third. But their football was lovely. And they played this box midfield, which probably Chris Wilder was alluding to. Bird and Twine, the two highest ones, with Knight and the player of the match, Joe Williams, who was sensational at the base of it. I saw him after the game and I said, "You like Busquets tonight, my friend?" And he thoroughly enjoyed
what
it.
What did he say?
Thoroughly enjoyed it. I understand he's a bit of a character, so I'm hoping that was relayed in the dressing room when he walked back down the tunnel. But they couldn't get control of that Sheffield United. And also, I don't know if you saw it, but Hayden Roberts on the left-hand side, they're playing kind of wing-backs, Roberts on one side and Hirakawa on the other. Roberts was just free for the entirety of the first half. And obviously, you've got this brilliant vantage position where you're commentating from at Bramall Lane. And I'm just like watching this wing-back just standing unopposed. And they did switch it out there a few times, but he's not particularly attacking Robert, so he turned back quite a lot or turned square. But it was just something that Sheffield United couldn't get a handle on. I just felt the fullback was getting Siriki drawn towards one of those aforementioned number 10s. Chowdhury was a little bit in no man's land. I just felt that they didn't really reorganise, and had they had maybe Cameron Pring on from the off, it could have been really problematic for Sheffield United. But Bristol City absolutely deserved their draw. Sykes coming on, lovely combination in the lead up to the goal, and Bristol City are still in a position to have a go. What I will say, statistically, Bristol City the second hardest running. I think Millwall the toughest. Bristol City pretty much play all the top teams, so they're going to have to do it the hard way. Sheffield United, I understand Chris Wilder freshening up the team. He's got a few niggles. His hands were forced a little bit. Rob Holding came in, did really well. I thought that was an avenue for Bristol City to get at them, considering he hadn't started, I don't think, a game maybe in the Championship for 18 months, did really well. So despite them being patched up, they were competitive. But a little bit of a flat performance. And interesting to see what happens at Hillsborough, because the 3 points, I think, were really important to them on Tuesday, given that they got a derby around the corner.
Yeah, I saw Bristol City Hull at the weekend. I was there and obviously played against 10 men for ages. And they do knock it around beautifully. They really keep the ball nice. They're very well coached, Bristol City. If they had the individuals that Sheffield United have got, even on the bench, just one or two of them, they could be absolutely nailed on for the playoffs, but they don't. And yeah, I think they'll just fall short, unfortunately, which must be really frustrating for Liam Manning.
Yeah, and we touched on it a few weeks ago, and I'm sure it'll be revisited if they don't make the playoffs. You know, that lack of want to go and get maybe one or two extra front players in the window, that is probably going to be the difference between them making it or not.
Yeah, chronic lack of investment. 2 points they are behind sixth place. Coventry lead 79 points, Sheffield United 77, Burnley 75 for the top three. They're all away from home this weekend. Meanwhile, in League One, Nathan Jones has put Bluewater Shopping Centre and Costa Coffee on the banned list for Charlton as they go for promotion. The Addicts won 1-0 at Crawley in midweek to move to within 5 points of the automatic places in League One. This in the week that Sunderland Till I Die banter merchant Charlie Methven has left his role as Charlton's chief executive. You've probably heard this or seen this clip by now, but Jones said, it's a massive sacrifice for us to achieve something, because you can't now go to Blue Water tomorrow walking around high-fiving and going to Costa Coffee when you should be resting and all those things. Sound like footballers' lives away from the pitch, Adrian, are pretty boring if that's what you're doing when you're wanting to go and have some fun.
I couldn't think of anything worse to do than go around Blue Water and have a Costa. I mean, first things first, it's just not the coffee of choice. Not for me, anyway.
It's better than Starbucks, but it's worse than Pret, and it's mid-level.
Yeah, I'm not. I prefer Starbucks, but I'm more of a Cafe Nero man myself. I think that's on a different level to Costa. But yeah, we've all got different tastes. Sam said this before we went on air. He wasn't having it that Charlton players are getting spotted and high-fived in Blue Water. That's absolutely true. There's no way that that's happening.
Listen, in its infancy, if Matt Holland was in there, it's a different story, isn't it? Kevin Lisby.
Jason Newell.
To the depths of League One. They need to get back in the Champo to get the high five.
Definitely. Nathan just cracks me up. I mean, he's so driven. And the message is, I want you to want it as much as I want it. That's the message, isn't it? But yeah, I don't think that's going to impact results, really. He also dug out, I don't know if you saw this, he dug out Greg Doherty.
Sensational stuff, this. Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant, because obviously his partner's just had a baby, missed the game because of it. And then he said, I don't know who books a cesarean the day before a game, but hey, that's what happens. Congratulations. We're glad everything's all right. But we've won some games without him. That could be to his detriment. So he's absolutely hammered him there, hasn't he? Just while he's doing a little bit of paternity leave, he's basically said, you ain't getting back in the team, mate. It is a fair point. If you're Greg Doherty, you probably, because I've been in this position where you book a cesarean, you do have a choice. You just seen the fixture list. I do wonder whether there's a part of him that thought, Crawley away. Yeah. I don't know whether I'm that up for that. So, you can go ahead and book it that day.
Or I wonder if maybe more likely his missus said, this is when I want to have this baby that's been, you know, making my life quite difficult for the past 9 months. I don't care if you're playing Crawley away. This is when the doctors recommend we have this child.
It's a valid case, yeah.
In League Two, meanwhile, Colchester just a point outside the playoff places. They saw off Port Vale in Essex. 4 wins on the spin for Cowley's crew. They haven't lost a league game since January the 4th. They play on an absolute sandpit of a pitch. Danny Cowley, it's interesting to me, Sam, the way that his career's gone. I'm wanting to throw shade at Colchester, but I saw the highlights of this game, like half full stadium, as I say, pitch that's pretty disgraceful. Do you think that he expected to find himself in League Two at this stage of his career? Because he was tipped for great things at one point.
Well, no, when he got that opportunity to go to Huddersfield in the Championship and did relatively well. There was a lot of goodwill towards him at Portsmouth as well. Just didn't work out ultimately. So, no, not at that stage. But I think having come out of the game and obviously done some work in the media and waited for an opportunity, I think geographically really suited. They like, or I'm sure at this stage of his career, the potential to build something, which, you know, Colchester have really lacked a bit of a plan over the last decade or so. So I think to get his hands dirty, really, and grow something from the bottom up would have been appealing. And I know, you know, having spoken to him and heard him speak, you know, the academy's improving, the infrastructure. And I think, you know, in the owner there that's been there many a year, it's probably something that could be a 5-10 year project. Not sure how long he did at Lincoln, probably near on 5 years. So I can see the appeal, and I think we were together, me and Clarky, that we anticipated them being really strong this year, and it's taken a while, but now we're seeing it. They are the best team across the last 10 games in the division. Something I noted yesterday, just looking at some numbers, they've had 10 different goal scorers in this 12-match unbeaten run, which shows they're not heavily reliant on someone, albeit I loved the goals the other night. Tavide's goal.
Great.
The run is, I mean, I loved him and Yonvian, who's now at Peterborough, seeing them in the back end of last year. They both got something physically very strong, but good technicians as well. You saw that in Tavide's goal. The finish, sublime, once he gets in to lift it into the roof of the net. And the winning goal, or the second goal, Lyle Taylor's delivery.
Oh, I mean, one of the free kicks.
Something we see it sometimes. I mean, I spoke about the Swindon centre-half who was taking free kicks, if you remember, a few months ago. It's quite unique seeing a centre-forward take them, especially as good a goal scorer as Lyle Taylor. But, I mean, it's like a shot from the touchline. Just needs the faintest of touches. So, two brilliant goals. Defensively, I would expect them to be pretty strong here on in. Yeah, they're on a brilliant run. Brilliant run, and no surprise to me, really.
Yeah, they did this win, and they were great goals, brilliant goals. I like Tavida. I think he's someone that they're going to cash in on at some point, isn't he? Someone will take him on with that sort of power, pace and poise in front of the goal. But yeah, the player that's been the standout this season for Colchester United is defensive midfielder on loan from Forest, Matt, Jamie McDonald. The fans love him in that part of Essex. Didn't play in this game, but he's only 21, but he's... Yeah, by all accounts, being one of the standout players in his position in League Two this season. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him in the future. But, yeah, the Cowley brothers know what they're doing. They know how to manage. They have unbelievable work ethic. No stone unturned. They won't fail for a lack of trying. And I think that goes a long way. It really does. They'll be giving the players all the ammunition they need to go out there and deliver. I think they're just very good at what they do, and it's a really nice fit for them at Colchester United.
Yeah, on the fringes of the playoffs they are, and they host Fleetwood on Saturday. Speaking of which, we're going to look at some of the weekend's games next. Well, it's they used to be managed by Wayne Rooney Classico at Home Park, where Plymouth host Derby in a key game in the fight to avoid relegation. Adrian, if I had to press you now, one, both, neither of these getting relegated at the end of the season, which are you going for?
Oh, that's a tough question. I'm going to say that Plymouth will go down, even though they're obviously, you know, signs of life. First away win at Pompey. What an amazing result that is. And obviously they've shown in the cups that they've got something about them. But yeah, I just think they let in too many goals, and they don't pick up enough points on their travels like they did here. So yeah, I think Plymouth will go. I think Derby can survive, but it's going to have to be a proper grit. Yeah, no, gritty backs to the wall effort that keeps them in the division, because they just don't have the firepower. Even if they had a Ryan Hardy, if they had someone like that up front, Ryan Hardy for Derby, I would say Derby are staying up, because they've got everything else. They haven't got that one who's going to make a difference up front, that's going to maybe run in behind and score goals. So I think Derby can do it. But I'm less confident about Plymouth. I would expect Derby to be able to grind out a draw or potentially a narrow win at Home Park this weekend. That said, I'm liking Plymouth's more positive approach. You know, going with a couple of strikers, he's trying to, yeah, maybe that's the way forward for them. You know, if you can't keep them out of the back, outscore the opposition. So yeah, let's see.
Yeah, brilliant first goal for Argyle at Pompey. Obafemi, Hardy, Bundu, all involved. Lovely touch from Hardy. And I just wanted to give Clarkie this stat, because I know he'll be all over this. 548 accurate passes, Pompey, in the game where they had, I think, round about 80%. How many accurate passes did Argyle have in the entirety of that fixture?
So they had 20% of possession?
Yeah, 548. Completed passes, Portsmouth. How many did Argyle have?
125.
74.
That is so bad. That is so bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible.
But it doesn't matter, does it?
It doesn't matter, but away from home, it's got to be a reason, hasn't it? You're going to have the odd occasion, maybe like last night. And I think Hardy does make a big difference to them. And I thought there were some standout performances, and obviously they've got a better structure now with the three centre-halves, although I think Plegasuelo may be missing now. So they're going to have to make a change there. But yeah, I think you still want to have a little bit more control. Maybe no Rando is a part of that as well. But yeah, I just thought that was incredible, because we know that Portsmouth haven't been overly intricate from the early part of the season as well. So huge contrast.
But it's the kind of game that Portsmouth didn't want to play. So they don't want 80% of the ball, do they, Portsmouth? So it's quite sensible in a way. Derby will not have loads of the ball either. It might be a different kettle of fish at the weekend. But yeah, look, if you're going to be that defensive, but you have pace up front, you've always got that outlet, haven't you, to hurt teams. So maybe that's the formula from here on in.
Well, Plymouth's better at home than away. Derby have only won once on the road all season. After this, they've still got to go to Swansea, Portsmouth and Hull. So a chance to take points off teams in and around them if they can put some form together on their travels. Elsewhere in the Championship, they've saved the Steel City showdown for Sunday. Sheffield Wednesday and Sheffield United go at it at Hillsborough just as the roast potatoes are getting drenched in gravy across the land. It's a 12:30 kickoff. That's what I'm getting at. What a way, Adrian, for Wednesday to come in to this game after coming from 2-0 down to win at Norwich on Tuesday. I was kind of looking at it thinking, well, this is now the biggest game of their season, you know, for obvious reasons because of the rivalry, but because it basically is their season. But it's not, is it? They're only 5 points off the playoffs, so it's not just about giving the neighbours a smack in the chops.
No, the season's alive. That win at Norwich has certainly breathed fresh impetus into their promotion bid. I was there at Hillsborough when they lost to Sunderland a couple of Fridays ago, and they played all right, and they played pretty well in parts of that game, but come out on the wrong side of it and lost it 2-1. But since then, scored three at Plymouth, won, scored three at Norwich and won, and obviously to come back from two down to win at Carrow Road is no mean feat at all, is it? So yeah, look, They've got something about them, Sheffield Wednesday. It's the issue I have with them is that I don't think they're very good at the back at all. I think that individually there's a few mistakes in them. I noticed that Shea Charles played in a much deeper role at Norwich, almost part of the back, part of a back three, which is interesting because he's a very good player. He's very good in that defensive midfield role. So what maybe he's recognised is that he can use his qualities in maybe a deeper role and bring in someone like Ingleson alongside Bannon in midfield. And that worked for them the other day. Gassama is playing very well at the moment. He's a real live wire. He's going to wind you up. He's going to frustrate you. He's going to miscontrol stuff. He's going to run down blind alleys. He's going to mess stuff up. But he's also the guy that makes things happen. Him with Bannon, with Windass, they've got a little bit of X factor about them. And that's a threat, I think, to Sheffield United in this game. If those combinations can begin to flow, and I've seen them flow against Sunderland, then they can absolutely cause some problems. And you know, in Patterson up front, they've got a guy who will win stuff in the air. If you put the ball in the box, Patterson will win it. So yeah, I give Sheffield Wednesday a real good shot at this. I think they can upset the Blades. It's going to be a great occasion, I think.
You'd hope it'd be a great occasion, Sam, but on the one hand we've got Chris Wilder talking about how tired his players are, and on the other, what is it, three of the last four meetings have finished 0-0 and there's been one goal in them, so they might cancel each other out. There might be a few niggly fouls, but who knows. Do you think that Sheffield United have got it within them to improve on what you saw from them on Tuesday?
I think so, because I think Harmer will come back in. I think Ahmed Hodzic was on the cusp of that booking that would mean he's going to miss two games. So he'll come back in as well. I think Vinny Souza is touch and go. They absolutely missed him desperately. I think the other night, Chowdhury looked a little bit rusty in midfield, albeit he's been okay at right back in the last couple of games. So Peck missed Souza, who's been pretty formidable. Well, those two have been formidable as a pairing. So I think there'll be a stronger Sheffield United that takes to the field. But I think Chris Wilder will probably want it to be tight and cagey. But you hope that Sheffield Wednesday just release the shackles and go for it because of the position that they're in the table. They've got nothing to lose. They were beaten at Bramall Lane by the solitary goal. So you hope that they open up a little bit and maybe have a bit of a go. I think it's one of the best derbies. Even the colours of the kit, You think of Alan Cork. You think of Chris Waddle.
I was just thinking, you do think of the FA Cup semi-final, what was that, 93? That's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a brilliant derby. I was going to have a little jog to Hillsborough yesterday. I was staying in the city centre, but I didn't realise, probably because Sheffield's not a city I know particularly well, and my only real experience is probably turning up on a coach, having stayed somewhere in the city when I was a player. I didn't realise that it's a few miles out, Hillsborough, and... you know, when you look on the running app, it looked like a steady incline uphill as well. So I swerved it and just ran around the city centre. But yeah, I expect it's going to be bouncing on Sunday, and they'll want to disrupt Sheffield United, no question. And when I was gearing up for the game the other night and prepping, Sheffield Wednesday away, and then there's a series of nice games for Sheffield United. This is the big banana skin. Burnley away in a month or so's time. Before that, Oxford, Millwall, Argyle, Cardiff. They finished Stoke and Blackburn. You know, there's a lot of games where I expect them to take maximum points. So if they can avoid defeat, at the weekend, they're in a brilliant position.
All right. Well, in League One, I'm going to pretend that Birmingham aren't in it anymore. They're 14 points clear of their nearest rivals. So they're basically up. The two closest teams to them meet at Adams Park on Saturday. It's Wickham against Wrexham. Wrexham beaten 2-0 at Phil Parkinson's old club, Reading, on Tuesday, whilst Wickham didn't play. The vibes around both these sides, questionable at the moment, I would say, Adrian. Wickham only won two of their last seven, but boy, one of them gives themselves a massive shot in the arm with victory here.
Well, this is a colossal game, absolute classic six-pointer, isn't it? It's, yeah, who's going to prevail? And I've got to say, I would fancy Wickham over Wrexham. You know, a bit of a worrying performance at Reading. He's... You know, he spent the money, hasn't he, on Sam Smith and Rodriguez up front, and it's not really clicking, is it? It's not particularly improved the team, and that's the issue. They're not scoring enough goals, are they? They're very reliant on keeping clean sheets, and they often do keep, don't they? You know, they keep clean sheets against Bolton, against Huddersfield, against Rotherham. So they're capable of shutting out teams. But given the wages that they're spending on strikers, I would have expected them to be finding the back of the net a little bit more often. It's just not really flowing for them. And I don't think this will be a flowing game either. I think this is going to be a nervy, tetchy battle, probably pretty low scoring as well. But I would probably side with Wickham because they're solid themselves, but also because they've got a couple more goal scorers in better form, certainly in Kone and Udo.
Do you think there's a chance, Sam, that Wrexham see a point as a good result here? They've got Stockport at home to come after this, but then it eases up a bit with games against Exeter, Cambridge and Burton. So is it maybe just don't lose these next two and then see where you are, or are they going to be a bit more front-footed than that?
No, I think so. And, you know, their troubles have been away from home. Albeit they've been on a decent winning sequence prior to the defeat at Reading. But yeah, I think given that Wickham are pretty strong at home, they lost relatively recently to Huddersfield by a 2-0, but their problems seem to be on the road at the moment. I was surprised to see, after how convincing they were against Burton and the shape working really well, really fluid, that they changed for the game at Peterborough. Humphreys played off the right. Udo played centrally with Kone, having done really well off the left. So I would predict and expect them to revert to kind of the 4-2-3-1 under Mike Dodds. But I think you're right, the way you led into it, Matt. There is a lot of uncertainty at Wickham, having had the change of manager. It just feels like the supporters aren't really confident that they're going to make it. And I,
really?
On the face of it, saw a really good side. So there'll be a little bit of anxiety going into what I believe is going to be a sellout at Adams Park. Pray for the car park attendance.
up on that hill.
So it's going to be Ramo, and it should be a really good atmosphere. Yeah, completely concur with Clarkey about that. Changing of the guard up front, you know, it seems so strange given how good they were with Palmer and of course Mullin
and Fletcher. Fletcher's had some good moments this season.
And now, you know, yeah, they're a little bit limp. And 17 away goals they've scored in comparison to 33 at home. So it has been a big problem away from home, converting chances, making chances. And I'm with Clarkey. Low scoring, King Kone to win it.
I tell you what, though, I'm just looking at Wickham's record against the top sides in the division. The top eight, they have played 7 matches against the top eight. So they've actually only played Birmingham twice. So they've got a lot of hard games to come, Wickham Wanderers, between now and the end of the season. Those 7 games, 1 win. Stockport away, smashed them 5-0. Lost twice to Birmingham, lost to Wrexham, lost to Charlton, lost to Huddersfield, drew with Reading. They haven't actually, you know, taken very many scalps this season, Wickham Wanderers, despite, you know, being absolutely outstanding. You know, flat track bullies, really.
To go full Carol Vorderman on the back of that, Clarkey, I looked at that this morning as well. Good minds. They've had 4 wins against top half teams. Wrexham have only had 5 wins in 18 against top half teams. So neither of them, they're both just basically battered everyone in the lower reaches of the division. And the teams in currently in 4th, 5th, 6th and 7th, so that's down to Huddersfield, have all had more victories against top half teams. So just shows you that they've put themselves in a formidable position by taking care of business against the lesser lights in the division. Birmingham, of course, have been able to beat everyone, and that's why they're at the summit so convincingly.
You feel for Rachel Riley, don't you? You think at this point she would have superseded Vorderman.
Never.
Mathematical reference point.
She'd have to do another decade, I'd say, to get in that, to get in that space.
I've always been a fan of Rachel Riley. I would have referenced her.
South End, isn't it? Clarkey.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
That's the link.
That's why I like her.
All right, I'll move on swiftly now. We are nearly done for today. We've got predictions and tweet of the week to come. Let me remind you first, though, about the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum 3 bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Predictions last week were a bit of a shambles, frankly. I got 1 point. Nobody else got anything. My point came courtesy of predicting that Barrow would beat Accrington. Yeah, not that good. What's it done for the scores, Clarkey?
Oh, I haven't got them in front of me, but it's not done much to the scores.
Better off than I was last week. That's what I'm going to say. But
I'll
still trailing.
Accordingly.
All right, let's see if we can do better this week, because that was definitely our worst effort of the season, I would say, with only one of us getting 1 point. Swansea Burnley is the first game up for grabs. What do you reckon, Sam?
1-0 Burnley is what I reckon.
Okay. That's a reasonable shout whenever Burnley are playing, although they have let a few of late. Adrian, see Swansea getting anything from this one?
Swansea 0, Burnley 3.
Crikey. I'm going to give the Swans a goal, and I will say that this will finish 1-3. To Burnley. So we're all going for the away W there. Shrewsbury Burton next up for us. Big game at the wrong end of League One. Which way does it go, Adrian?
I found this hard. I mean, there's a bit of a gap now, isn't there, between Burton, Shrewsbury and Posh. They need to win. Draws aren't any good. And I'm going to go for an away win here. Shrewsbury 1, Burton 2.
Wow, okay. They need to win. Draws aren't any good. 1-1 for me. What about you, Sam?
I mean, this will be the greatest of great escapes now, wouldn't it? Or up there, if Shrewsbury were able to do it. How can Gareth Ainsworth continue to motivate the side, do you know what I mean, to go on a bit of a run? And Burton are clearly, over the last few months, in much better fettle. I'm going to go same as before. 1-0 away side. 1-0 Burton.
Okay, a couple of away wins there. Then we'll finish off with Swindon against Cheltenham. Lots of talk about Cheltenham this week, but not for stuff that's happening on the football pitch, but the racetrack. I will say that Swindon will win this 2-0. What do you reckon, Adrian?
A lot of goals in Swindon matches, aren't there? And Cheltenham have been involved in some thrillers as well. So I'm gonna say this is going to be a belter. Obviously, is that a derby? Can we call this a derby? I mean, you're a Swindon man. Swindon
maybe Cheltenham. A little bit of rivalry, not a derby.
Yeah, not a derby, is it? But yeah, the both teams score lots, concede lots. So it's going to finish Swindon 3, Cheltenham 2.
Blimey, sounds like fun. Mm. Sam, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I like that. There was, during my time and many years after, Swindon had never beaten Cheltenham in the EFL. I think that's been dealt with now in the last few seasons. But yeah, they were a bogey team for a number of years. Not now. Holloway men 2-1 victory.
Okay, plenty of goals at the County Ground if you're going this Sunday then. We'll finish as we always do with Tweet of the Week. It comes from Notts County's Kellen Gordon, who says, proper hard-fought battle last night to get the 3 points away from home, 2 exclamation marks. Also to top it off with a clean sheet and on to Saturday now, 2 exclamation marks. All caps, whoosh, my favourite, the salute emoji, and then a fingers crossed emoji too. Sam, I just think this ticks a lot of boxes. It's got 409 likes for a reason. It's because this is absolutely classic League Two footballers content for me. I have no notes. 10 out of 10.
I'm very surprised that you taking that stance, considering I believe he's a former Derby player and current Notts County player. But fetching kit, nice photograph, your salute emoji, whoosh is a new word to the footballing vocabulary. Yeah, it's a 9 for me.
You've got a whoosh in you, Clarky, I think. So I think you would have appreciated this. He's done the tour of the East Midlands, the lad, hasn't he? Because he was at Stags as well. He's had a loan at Lincoln City, end his career winning the Champions League at Forest, and he's completed it.
Yeah, I don't. Do you know what? I can see myself using whoosh, but I don't think I've ever typed those words. I'm a massive fan of whoosh. Like, just silly words. I'm all over it. Yeah, no, just on that alone, it's excellent. It's had 10K views. Yeah, hopefully that'll continue to grow. Yeah, well played, Keller.
Good news for Notts County, a big win for them and a good tweet from one of their players as well. What a way to finish this show there now. We shall be back with another one next week, of course. Enjoy the football if you're off to a game. Otherwise, we'll catch up with you again next week. Bye for now.